afternoon. Good restful time. Cynthia and I took a good nap, and it was great. Most of you look like you're alive and alert and having a good time. You know, why don't we do this? You know, that song just reminded me. Probably it's been maybe an hour, maybe even several weeks, or maybe 25 years since you've told your mate you love her or love him. Why don't you just take a look at him right now, tell him you love him. Maybe a tough thing to do, because there's some tough issues in a lot of our lives, but you're here learning, you've made a commitment to work to get together on it. Tell him you love him. Let's give him a kiss. What do you say? This is a physical relationship tonight. I love you. Hey, it's fun. Oh, yes. Turn the microphone on, right? One of the things. Training, signals. Thank you for your signals. Three commitments. What are the three things we want you to take home? I will be diligent to have a consistent time with the Lord daily. I will pray with my mate each night before retiring. And I will commit myself to have a date with my mate weekly. And hopefully you'll magnify the Lord together in your relationship. You know, we talked a lot about our relationships and how to talk to one another and all. And it's interesting. Hi and Lois have some fun things going in their relationship. But here they had a little party at their house. I showed this to the guys this morning, but I thought you ladies would enjoy this. And the girls are discussing the scene in the other room. Whoever said men had a hard time expressing their emotions never saw them watching sports on TV. How could they miss that shot? Oh, boo-hoo! it's amazing. We can express emotions when we want to at certain things. You know, we find a lot of, because cartoons are a caricature of life, and, you know, we also have some great writers that tell a lot about communication. And we thought this article by Dave Barry was terrific in terms of talking about how men have a, he says, guys have a hard time understanding what it means to open up. Now, none of you guys have that problem after this. We've taught you all this time. You're ready to go. But here's Dave Barry on this issue. And he says, today's topic for guys is communicating with women. If there's one thing that women find unsatisfactory about guys, and I base this conclusion on the extensive scientific study of the pile of cosmopolitan magazines where I get my hair cut, it is that guys do not communicate enough. This problem has arisen in my own personal relationship with my wife, Beth. I'll be reading the newspaper, and the phone will ring. I'll answer it, listen for 10 minutes, and then hang up and resume reading. Finally, Beth will say, who was that? And I'll say, Phil Wonkerman's mom. Now, Phil is an old friend we haven't heard from in 17 years. And Beth will say, well? Well, what? Well, what did she say? And I'll say, she said Phil is fine, making it clear by my tone of voice that although I did not wish to be rude, I am trying to read the newspaper here, and I happen to be right in the middle of an important panel of Calvin and Hobbes. But Beth, ignoring this, will say, that's all she said? And she will not let up. She will continue to ask district attorney-style questions, forcing me to recount the conversation until she's satisfied that she has the entire story, which is that Phil just got out of prison after serving a sentence for murder, which he committed when he became a drug addict because of the guilt he felt when his wife died in a freak submarine accident while Phil was having an affair with a nun. But now he's all straightened out and has a good job as a trapeze artist and is almost through with his surgical part of his sex change and just becoming happily engaged to marry a prominent member of the New Kids on the Block. So in other words, he's fine. Which is exactly what I told Beth in the beginning. But that is not enough. No, she wants to hear everything. Anybody relate to that? You know, it's so much fun. Why don't you go tell us a little more serious part of this conversation.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit tonight about communication and how to encourage one another to talk and to share. We really like what Larry Crabb says. Workshops on communication teach verbal strategies for sharing and listening in non-attacking and non-defensive styles. But rarely do they pinpoint the key problem of selfish motivation. Sharing and listening skills are important to learn, but I rather think that the effort spent teaching the skills could sometimes be better used to persuade people to stop living self-centered lives and to seek first the purposes of God. And as far as we're concerned, we're going to share just a little bit on some things of communication that we have learned. But I think the real message we want to give and what we hopefully tried to communicate this morning was that we're to die to self. We're to consider our mate better than ourselves. We are to give and to minister and to share and to promote their spiritual and personal welfare. That's why we're married. We are better together than we could ever be apart. And I'm a better person today because of Jack's ministry in my life than I ever would have been had I never married him. I think more than anything else, what we want to share tonight is to have a heart to communicate. And I majored in English in college, and I remember I had a professor who we were asking about different ways of communication and using the word ain't and different colloquialisms. And he said, you know what? He said, if I said I ain't going to the store, would you understand what I was saying? And we'd say, yes, we understand you're not going to the store. He said, that's the function of language, is to communicate. And if you understand what I'm saying, then you have communicated. So it's not always the technical skills that we need to be really concerned about. It's whether, no matter how we say it, verbally or non-verbally, did you understand what I said? And the way we can receive that is when we understand that someone really wants us to understand what we're saying and wants to listen. So essentially, love is not the basis of marriage. Commitment is the basis of marriage. And a commitment to communicate is right at the heart of a marriage. We have a thing that Jack and I say. If we have a list of questions, we gave you a list of questions in your notebook that you talked about this morning that we thought you can ask each other. Those are great questions to just keep asking each other through the years. And Jack and I have a favorite question that we ask each other all the time. And it's, how are we doing? And it gives the other person permission, in a sense, I'm really asking, how am I doing? Or is there anything that you think we need to talk about? Or how are things going? But it's just a great question. And we'll ask each other that question, just maybe even riding in the car, or at just different times, just because we want to be sure we're keeping short accounts. And I love it when Jack says, how are we doing? Because he's really saying, talk to me. Tell me if there's something I'm doing that's frustrating you, or that if you need to talk, how are things going? And it's just a great question to ask each other. And it really shows me Jack's heart to communicate and be involved in my life.
Every once in a while, I get those nice strokes I'm looking for, too. So.
And we have this great cartoon by Kathy.
Yak, 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 yak. We just changed the channel again. Didn't you, Irving? What? We're nowhere near a TV set. Most of you read Kathy. Your eyes just went blank as if you switched to something more interesting to you inside your brain. My face may still be on the screen, but your internal remote control is flipping between the office channel and the sports channel.
And I think one of the things Jack and I do, and I shared with the men this morning, that the thing that ministers to me the most is when I know I have Jack's undivided attention and that he's listening to me. He's really listening, and he's not thinking about the game, or he's not flipping his internal remote control and something and doing something else and thinking about something else when I'm talking to him. I know there, have you all ever talked to someone and you know they're not listening? That happens to me a lot for some reason, and I'll just stop talking and they don't even know I've stopped. So it's really frustrating.
She's not talking about me, by the way.
No, I'm not.
For once.
But just to have someone's heart to be concerned about what you're going through and what you're thinking and what you're saying is so important. In fact, there are sometimes, I know when I'm not focused in on Jack a lot of times, and I'll just say, honey, just a minute, I need to take care of this, and then I'm going to sit down, and you'll have my undivided attention. If that's necessary to do that, do that. But just to know that someone really is listening. And another thing that Jack and I have done that I appreciate about Jack, we never, ever leave the house unless he gives me a kiss and tells me he loves me. And that is so important because it says a lot. In today's age, going on a trip, even driving downtown, going to the office, you never know if you're coming back or not. You just don't know what's going to happen anymore. And you would hate to leave your mate and not know that you told him you loved him and that things were all right. And even if Jack and I have had a little tiff or something, Jack will come up, he said, you know, no matter what is going on or what has been said or anything, you know I do love you, don't you? And I say, yes, I do. And so we may not have time to thoroughly take care of the situation right there, but the commitment is still there. And so that's just meant a lot to me. Even when Jack leaves at 4:00 in the morning, he will come over and kiss me and say, I love you, and before he leaves. And I really appreciate that.
You know, I grew up in a home where physical affection was not there. And I had not remembered that my mom and dad had, maybe my mom had told me she loved me, my dad hadn't. But I don't remember when the last time was that they kissed me. And God challenged me on just this thing that Cynthia's talking about of not leaving home without telling your wife and your kids that you love them and giving them a sign of affection. Because you want to live life without regrets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kind of things. And it was just one of those things where I went home one Christmas and I said, I don't know what's going to go on, but my dad's a tough old machinist, mechanic, great guy behind all that stuff. But we never, you know, it's kind of like that illustration of I told you I loved you 25 years ago. If it changes, I'll let you know. I knew my dad loved me, but in a lot of other ways, but we'd never communicated that. And so I went home, saw my dad, got out of the car, took my dad's hand. We always shook hands and stuff like this. And I took his hand, pulled him to me, and gave him a hug and a kiss on the cheek. And Cynthia said, my dad was about this tall. She said, your dad grew a foot. Said he appreciated that so much. It communicated so much. And so, you know, just the fact that you have to take an initiative sometimes when things aren't comfortable, when they're not, the thing that you'd like to do. But, you know, my dad died, and he never did tell me that by saying, I love you. I told him I loved him one night as I left the hospital. He was dying of cancer, and I knew he was going under the morphine cocktail and stuff like this, and I said, well, Dad, I'll see you in the morning. And I gave him a kiss on the forehead and said, Dad, I love you. He said, yep, same to you, son. And I told Cynthia, I said, that's as close as he could get, but that's great. You know, and he affirmed what I said. And so, you know, even the little things like this that you need to have are important. So just this thing we're talking about of the commitment and a heart to communicate and to share with one another is so important. It's the little things that mean a lot, right? It's not the big things that you do. It's not the diamond rings and the cars and the houses and things that mean. It's the little things that mean a lot in terms of your communication.
So,
give me one more thing.
Okay, hon.
That's also important, what you communicate with your kids. You know, what's been fun is that we've taken our teenagers to school, and when they know we're leaving town, right in front of the school, they'll lean over to her or to me, the one, and give us a hug and give us a kiss on the cheek and tell us goodbye. And I said, boy, when your teenagers will do that with all these kids out in front, you know, we've communicated something. They know they're going to get a hug in the airport when they see me. It's just, I've caught my youngest son when I see my oldest one, he'd go, the signal's behind my back, and my son and my oldest son started laughing, and I said, what are you laughing about? And he said, oh, Michael. And then my one of our daughters said, Michael's telling you, you're going to give him a hug. You know, they have to tell on each other. So. But it's neat. We've communicated that's important to us. It's important for us to be able to show them we love them, and it's important for us to receive that back. And so, it's important for them to see my affection for Cynthia, not an erotic affection, but a genuine commitment to love her and care for her.
So we really just have two basic things in communication: to have a heart to just do that, to consider your mate in that way, and to do it. It's the Nike thing, just do it. And the other thing is, and we want to give you the end of the scenario of when Jack forgot me. We got in the car and he hit his head and he apologized for forgetting me. Well, I was left hanging because I had all of these feelings. I mean, for an hour I'd been thinking, how could he forget me? I mean, I must not be important to him at all. If he could just drive right by the coffee shop, he had to go right by where I was and not even think of me. And so I had, you know, I'd built up this big case and that I must not be important to him. He doesn't love me and all this stuff. And then Jack quickly says, oh, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Well, I mean, what could I say? I mean, at this point, we didn't know some of this stuff. And so I said, well, yes. And so as far as Jack was concerned, it was over. And
how could she not forgive me?
But I was left with all these feelings. And I knew Jack, I knew in my heart, he didn't get up Sunday morning and say, how can I frustrate Cynthia, you know? How can I upset her today? I know I'll forget her. I knew it was not premeditated. I knew that in my heart. I knew also that he really meant it when he said he was sorry. And I knew he really wanted my forgiveness on that. But I was just left. And so we learned this the hard way. So I was struggling. Lord, I need to forgive him. I know all this, but I don't feel like it. I've got all this stuff going on inside. So finally, after 3 days of this, I mean, I was okay, and then I'd get all upset again. So finally, Jack, it was really neat. After dinner one night, he said, I think you and I need to talk. Great insight. And so, as he said, we went for tea and tears. And so, again, we just struggled through this. And finally, I said, you know, I know you meant not to forget me. I know you were sincere when you asked me to forgive you. But I've just got all these feelings. And so, as we talked through and he listened to my feelings and he acknowledged my feelings, when he finally said, well, you know, I can see why you'd feel that way, and I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Then I was free to forgive him. And so the second major thing, and we're going to give a little scenario here in a second, in communication as far as we're concerned in terms of our learning in this process, is to acknowledge one another's feelings. No matter whether you understand it or think it's valid, that is the way that person is feeling. And you have got to do that. And you can do it real simply. I can see you really feel strongly about this. Or I can see that you're upset. Or I can see that you're really frustrated. Or I can see that you're really struggling. What can I do to help? Or how can we resolve this? And once, it's a simple thing to acknowledge someone's feeling. I mean, it only takes a couple of seconds, but it's very, very necessary in communication.
You know, one of the things that I learned that I needed to do was I needed to ask those questions, you know, how can we resolve it? I needed to take the point charge on this thing, because I was not anxious to talk to her, by the way. I think it took me about 3 days to, knowing that she was upset about something, And I was scared to death to think that it might be with me. And I didn't want to deal with it. I was busy too. You know, you're going to get, and if you're not busy, you make yourself busy. And but as we sat and talked, the thing that I wanted to do was let her know that I really cared about what she had to say. And I said, well, I'm not sure I understand why you feel that way, but I want to. See, the key thing is that we want to talk to one another. It's that commitment again that's really the part of love on this thing. And it's that it builds trust when we know that we're committed to each other. It's a trust relationship that I can share my whole life and heart with you, and you're not going to think I'm dumb or cross or something outlandish. And that I wanted her to share what was going on in her life, whether it was real or not. I wanted her to be able to share with me. I wanted to learn to understand it. I said, I don't understand why you feel that way, but will you tell me about it? And, you know, that was when I got about an hour's conversation that I didn't understand. And so I said, well, let me see if I can give it back to you and if I understood what you had to say. And so kind of like you teach your kids, you know, now what did daddy say, you know, and you have them repeat it back. Well, I said, let me see if I can repeat back what you've said. And so that I can see if I understand. And not only do I need to get the facts down, but I need to at least explain some of how I think she might feel on this. So it's important in a conversation like this that you not only get the facts about how you think about that, but then how you feel about it. Because I've got feelings too, and there's times that I would like for her to understand the way I feel. And I gave her a chance. We made this get and go here back and forth on this understanding and not understanding and things like that for a while to where finally I got it straight. And then I could genuinely and with real sincerity, not a quick apology, but tell her that I was wrong in having forgotten her, that I was selfish in my attitude because I was thinking totally of myself as I drove out there to do that thing, totally absorbed in what I was doing. And that I was wrong in being so self-absorbed that I would forget her. Will you forgive me? And see, I didn't make any suggestion. Well, it's because I was doing this and because I was doing that and 14 other things, huh? That's not a part of confession. You know, when God says you're a sinner, He says you're a sinner, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And that's it. And that's when we say, yes, Lord, I'm a sinner. Please forgive me. Mm-hmm. And then without the excuses, we can ask for somebody's full forgiveness and know we have it. But see, she had not understood that I was really sincere in the first time I asked her, and she had not had a chance to share her side of it. And so it's very important in this kind of a scenario for you to take the time to really talk to each other. Here's a little time that we might give you an illustration of another little scenario, and so I'll let Cynthia start.
This is after we've just attended a Bible study, and we are leaving the house, and we're in the car. Jack, I really felt hurt tonight when you talked about me in front of everybody.
What on earth did I do now? You always make mountains out of molehills. Did you notice the little subtle attack on her oversensitivity?
You put me down in front of the whole group when you were talking about what happened the other day.
Honey, that was not a put down. You completely misunderstood what I meant. Did you notice how well I parried that off? I defended myself and then went to the attack.
It's your fault.
Yeah.
Well, it really hurt, and I'm angry.
Okay, I'm sorry. What else can I say? It sounded like just what we explained, that quick apology, quick conversation-ending apology. It's over with, and you shouldn't bring it up again because I just apologized. Now, the right way might be this, that previously, I'd wanted to avoid my pain by defending myself, and now I'm determined to better understand better what had happened and how it hurt Cynthia and to learn from this in order to treat her better in the future. And so we might say something like this. Honey, I can see that I really hurt you tonight. I guess I don't understand what I said, that was so painful, but I want to. Will you talk to me about it?
I don't know, Jack. It still hurts a lot.
Well, I can accept that, and I want to do a better job of making you feel loved. I failed you badly tonight, and I want to learn from it. See, there's a humility that's there in that conversation, not putting the blame on her. That used to be a funny thing when we were first married, when we were dating, I used to turn things around. It was always her fault, and we'd laugh about it and have such a good time. And after about 5 years, she said, "You know, I don't think that's funny anymore. I think you really think it's true." And so, it's funny how those things creep into your conversation.
But one of the things Jack did in that scenario is he acknowledged my feelings. I can see that I did hurt you tonight. I don't understand particularly how I did that, but I want to. And that just frees me up a lot when Jack does that. And you all, you may not understand why that person reacts that way, but you need to be willing to want to. And one of the things Jack is so good about saying to me after we've talked, this has just happened over the last 2 or 3 years, I think, but he opens himself up enough to ask me, "Do you feel like I've really listened to what you said?" And I think that really takes courage for him to say that. And there are times when I say, "You know, Jack, I'm not sure you really understand yet." And so, bless his heart, then we have to go over it again. But I really appreciate his asking me that, because it means a lot, because it tells me he really does want to understand, and he's willing to go the second mile with me if it's necessary.
You know, we go back to some of our models of communication here. And Hi comes home after a busy day, and he says, "Hi, honey, anything new around here?" "Nothing much. I had lunch with an old boyfriend." He picks up the paper. "What's for dinner?" You're right. He doesn't listen to you. So the kids pick up on what's going on around the house, don't they? And then I showed the guys this thing this afternoon, and Helga is sitting there watching what's going on. And says, "Why don't you come right out and say it, Helga? You want me to paint the house today, don't you?" You know, we have to write our signals on the wall sometimes for us to understand them. But let's have fun with it and all.
We think one of the commitments that we've talked about is to date and communicate. And as I said, Jack and I sat down and we thought, what 3 things can we do if we practiced daily that would ensure us to keep our marriage together and that we would continue growing and it would get better and better? And one of the things is just having time together each week on a date. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about this. You don't have to go out on a date particularly. We're going to kind of just give some ideas. And there's a list of dating ideas in your book that we took from
several places,
not our own. But anyway, we've got some great cartoons to kind of lead up to all of this.
Sally Forth and Ted are great at their learning how to date. And here she starts off and she says, "Look at our lives, Ted. We spend every waking moment dealing with work, child rearing, or household stuff. Are you trying to cheer me up?" "I'm just saying romance is getting lost in the shuffle. What do you suggest?" "I read that a regular date with your spouse could help." Maybe they've been to our seminar, right? "How about Friday? I'll see if Dad will let me have the car." And then he says, "Oh, I feel a zip coming on." Back to the dating days and things. Now they're learning a little bit more. And he's on the way out to the car and he says, "Explain again why we're going on this date." "We're like lots of couples. The time we spend together is almost entirely devoted to household stuff or childhood rearing. The theory is you can put romance back into your marriage by leaving all those mundane tasks at home. One night, here's the hardware store. I need to stop for some duct tape." "You're not quite with the program yet, Ted." It takes a while to learn some of these things. And then, now, here she's explaining it to Hillary. "Dad and I are going on a date tonight, Hillary. It's a little hard to explain, but..." And then Hillary says, "It's a all you do together are mundane things like household chores and child rearing. So you're going to go on a date to recapture lost romance. Where did you hear that? School. They teach us that kind of stuff so we know how to react when our parents get weird on us. It's amazing what the kids learn at school. And they're still learning. I'm looking forward to our date tomorrow night, Ted. It still sounds a little weird to go out on a date with your spouse. I think it sounds romantic. What do? Something fun and exciting, keeping in mind, of course, that neither of us can stay awake past 10 o'clock on Fridays. And he says, that goes without saying. So, I can tell that a few of you have understood what that's like. It's amazing. I ought to ask how many of you didn't celebrate New Year's this year. Thanks for being so patient, Ted. Actually, I found it interesting. In fact, I think men would understand women a lot better if we would each spend an afternoon shopping for the shoes with the woman in our life. My, you're brimming with insight. Are we talking about once a month or once a lifetime? I think once a lifetime would be plenty. And then, of course, we have to go back. Where's mine? What happened to mine?
Oh, right here.
Okay.
Sorry.
Signals here, dear. We have to go back to our paragon of marriage relationships and everything. Helga's saying, you know what our trouble is? What? Better sit down and get comfortable. And so she's got her list, and I tell you, one of the things that that I tell Cynthia every once in a while is I said, well, it's, you know, we need to go out someplace. Well, get your list and bring it along. Just, you know, tell me what all you've got on there, of the things she wants me to do, not do, those kind of things. And so maybe it's like Helga's list, if you haven't done that in a while. But give your mate a chance to go over their list of things that are there and keep short accounts that way.
One of the things in terms of dating that we found, and we think it needs to be once a week, and you don't have to go out. You can just set aside a night. And let me, one of the things Jack and I have done a lot, and we did early on, especially with all of our children, and when there were a lot of activities. On Sunday night, we would sit down for 10 minutes and go over the week's calendar. Because we got into a lot of trouble assuming the other one knew what was happening. And at that time on Sunday night, we would say, now when can we have our time together this week? Because sometimes it cannot always be the same time or the same night. And so you look at your week. Okay, we're doing this and this and this. You know, good, I'm glad you're telling me this. And I didn't have that down. And then you say, when can we have some time together this next week? So you plan that. So it's very important that you plan that. And we always did that on Sunday night. Then you take turns. The wife plans what you're going to do 1 week for a date, and the husband plans the next week what you're going to do. One of the things Jack and I did for years when we had children and not, you know, we're not free to always go out and eat, was we would eat and get our kids settled down, and they were old enough they could kind of do their homework, while we would slip off to the cafeteria about 7:30 and just get tea and coffee. And we could sit at the table there for an hour or two and not interrupt anyone and get all the free tea and coffee that we wanted. And we did that many, many nights on our date nights, and it didn't cost much at all. Another thing we would do when we had our small children, it was hard to get babysitters and we didn't have all the money that we would want to have. We'd set aside a night and we'd put the children to bed and I would have something special, some cheese and crackers and tea or whatever. And I would just make a little something special for us to have, and that would be our time just there at the house, just to talk. And again, all the times that we go out, we go over these questions, the one set of questions that's in your book. You know, what's been going on in your life lately? What's a joy? What's a struggle? How are we doing? What are some things that, you know, you've perhaps a light for me to change. And just to ask those questions all the time, because we're always growing and always changing. I think it's fine if you want to go out and have a meal and maybe go to a movie, but you need to set aside the time at the meal for an hour, hour and a half to talk. The main reason you go out or take any time for a date is to communicate. But I think it's okay to have fun too. We enjoy that. But the main thing is, I told the men this morning, a wife can go through the week really well if she knows she's going to have her husband's undivided attention for a period of time each week. At least I know that really meant a lot to me. So those are the things that we like to just share about dating. Anything you want to add?
You know, trading babies, keeping other kids, people's kids, and things like this. And Cynthia, of course, I take a great deal of pride in telling this, but Cynthia tells women quite often that one of the best times she remembers of us doing this was that the first time I learned that it was a good deal that I asked the girl who worked for me in my clinic to keep, who also knew our kids, and I asked her to babysit for us, got that taken care of, and I made the arrangements for everything else, and I told her on Monday that we were going to go out on Friday. And now she had three kids in 3 years, and so just the idea that she could look forward to that 5 days later was the highlight in her life. And on things, and I thought, great, what a great guy I am, you know, to plan that ahead. That was a real benefit. But every once in a while, you know, I have learned a few things as I went along, and so just some of the little thoughtful things that you can do. And she had already told me that she had wanted me, you know, one of the things I could do for her is to help take care of babysitting and things, and it finally sunk in. Yeah, I could do that. So, little things.
So when you're communicating, and you know your spouse has a heart to communicate, and you enjoy being together so that you can share that time together and communicate, then that makes your physical communication just really great.
Let's take a look at what men and women think about each other physically. She's thinking he's a soulmate, and he says, ah, playmate. maybe it wasn't quite that much at love at first sight, but of course, here's Rose and Jimbo, and she comes in, and she has to give Jimbo a little bit more clues than usual. But she says, untie my apron for me. Why, can't you do it yourself? I need my hands free. Well, turn around. No. Why don't you just ask for a hug? I shouldn't have to ask for a hug. And so sometimes we have to play games, and hopefully your wife doesn't have to give you that much of a suggestion for the affection that she needs. Now, Hi and Lois are good at this. You know, she's a working woman and all like this. And Hi is complaining here a little bit. And he says, we don't have spontaneity in our life anymore. You're right, dear. Why don't I put that on the schedule for Saturday afternoon? you know, sometimes we feel like that's our physical relationship, that I have to book out sex a week in advance. And, you know, whatever happened to just having a hug and having an afternoon by yourself and things like that, and the spontaneous times that that you might have had. And so what we're talking about is, how do you communicate that brings up that spontaneity? And even though it may be because of circumstances, have to be planned out ahead, you talk about it, and it's still something you look forward to. So let's give you another little scenario. And, of course, none of these things, of course, are exactly ours, but they sometimes fit too closely. And so I might call Cynthia and say this. And I said, hi, babe, how's it going?
Fine.
I've been sitting here thinking about you, so I checked my schedule, and I'd like to spend an evening with just you. How about Thursday?
That sounds great.
I've already asked Betty to keep the kids, so it'll just be you and me at the house by ourselves. I'm really looking forward to a special evening with you.
Great. I'll plan a nice dinner, and we'll have time to be together without interruption. Thanks for thinking about this.
Now, great idea. So after dinner, this is might be the scene. Boy, that was a good dessert. While I put on some music, why don't you go slip into something comfortable?
Oh, I'm comfortable in this. Don't turn up the music too loud, because I have a long list of things I want to talk to you about, since we never get to be alone together very much.
A list? Talk? Okay. You know, it's... I can tell that there is some experience out here in these things. You know, it's really fun because the Song of Solomon is, as Sam was telling us, his kids learned that's a real sexy book. You know, and it is. And here's a thought from Song of Solomon. It says, "Let me see thy countenance, let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is lovely." And Ed Wheat, the one who's written a lot of books on marriage and things, has this to say. This speaks of a man who loved to look into his wife's eyes, who loved to talk to her and to hear what she had to say to him, no matter what. No wonder she became completely secure in his love. As a result of this openness and communication between them, their relationship could grow and mature until it became many-faceted, expressing all the aspects of love. He was her brother, lover, friend, teacher, companion, husband. She was equally everything to him. Their conversation, their lovemaking, their enjoyment in being together became even deeper and richer in quality. Well, what a great thing to look forward to just in our relationship. That's what I'd like.
1 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5. Let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, this is talking about the physical relationship in marriage. The Word of God says, don't deprive one another. And I remember early on in our marriage, I developed the really good excuses. I mean, Jack and I would be brushing our teeth, and I'd say, I am really tired. Or, I've got a headache tonight. And it was my signal, and again, I was a good catcher giving him signals, and Jack knew that what I was saying. I never forget reading this example that if a husband likes to have a pitcher of cold water in the refrigerator so that he can go to the refrigerator anytime he wants and drink some water, he just goes when he needs it and desires it. But if he's never sure that the pitcher of water is going to be in the refrigerator, he's always going and checking to see if it's there or not. And that's what happens a lot of times in a physical relationship. And it's not always just the husband checking with the wife. Sometimes it's the other way around. But if the husband is never quite sure when the time is right, or if the wife is never quite sure when the time is right, then they're always testing the waters and reaching over, you know, and seeing, are you going to respond? Is this a good time? But in the marriage relationship, if you know that your mate will always respond, then it's very freeing. And when I first began, when I read the Word of God and realized what God said about the physical relationship, I realized I was being really disobedient to God. That I was not to deprive Jack unless we decided mutually to spend time away from each other to pray. And I'll be honest, Jack and I have never done that. So when Jack realized I would never say no, it was exciting for both of us. And it freed me up from having to play games. And it really freed Jack up. So let me just say this, though. And this is something that Jack and I have developed on our own. And we're really being vulnerable here, you all. But sometimes I may just be totally worn out at night. And Jack will snuggle me up, and I know how to read the signals. And
I'm not real subtle.
And so Jack and I have talked about this. If I feel like I am just not physically up to really responding as I should and as Jack enjoys and likes, then we have an agreement that before the night is over, I will initiate the relationship. And we've just, you know, it's Jack said, I'm glad we waited. It's just a neat thing that we have together that we just would like to share with you. So don't always feel like there's pressure to perform. Work out what is good. But Jack always knows if I say not right now, he knows that within a limited period of time that we will be together. And that has really helped us a lot. I'd like to share with you what Walt Wangerin has said. Talk truthfully without a hint of guilt or else of criticism, even about sexual difficulties. Talk as partners who are discussing the third being between you, as parents would discuss a child in need of special care. Then all your talk will be positive, a building up and not a tearing down. It isn't a baby, of course. It's your sex life. But speaking this way, you will be able to handle even heavy things, impotence, frigidity, genital pain, unexpected feelings of anger, without focusing guilt on one or shame on the other, which would divide and silence you after all, and would perpetuate the problem between you. Parents talk very well to share the work of healing a sick child, because together they love that child. Spouses likewise can talk openly and share their talents, their perceptions, opinions, and their actions to heal a troubled sex life because together they possess that life. And I think this is probably one of the most freeing things Jack and I have come to in our marriage relationship. I guess we were married 15 or so years before we ever talked about our physical relationship openly. And it has just been really neat for us to have the freedom to do that. And it's been very freeing for Jack. And as I've learned to read his signals, and there have been times when I really didn't understand what he was wanting or had planned, and because he hadn't really fully communicated to me so that I understood. And so now, though, again, as we talked about withdrawal or coolness, whenever I sense that, then I've learned to just say to Jack, sweetheart, did you have expectations of our being together? Are you disappointed? And often he'll say, well, yes, I did. And I said, well, you know, well, let's talk about it. How can we solve this? And so we've just found that that's kept a lot of barriers, a lot of walls being built up between us, because we're able to talk and to move toward one another, even when it might be uncomfortable. And we even have some questions in your notebook that we would like for you to talk about tonight. In fact, we're just about through, so we'll have time before the coffee comes on at 9 for you all to go over. There's a section, what is it, the fourth yellow sheet, a section on communication that you all can go over. And then behind, on the back side of that communication sheet are some questions that you can ask one another about your physical relationship.
You know, in light of what Cynthia's talking about there, see, knowing that she's going to be considerate of my needs and to respond to me whenever I try to initiate sex, I don't have to keep going to the refrigerator and checking, as she gave that illustration, because I know that if I show some affection, we're going to come to a meeting of meaning about what's there. But it also frees me up, because I love to hug this sweet thing. And I want to be able to just be able to show affection to her without always having something else in mind. You know, sometimes, and we've learned to do this, because I come in the house and I'm frazzled. And she'll say, how are things going? And I said, I just need a hug. You know, nothing behind it. I just need a hug, you know, and I need to be able to say that, and I need to be able to give that to her, and I need to be able to receive that from her without having always having to feel like I'm testing the waters. Well, I better try right now because she might be tired tonight or later or whatever else, you know, and so you never know. And it's, you know, are we stupid sometimes? I mean, that's a harsh word to say about us, but we live so long without the freedom of really talking to each other about something that is very precious to both of us. Now, obviously, our sex life didn't wane too much because we had four kids during that 15 years. And it's kind of like she got pregnant every time I kissed her. I wasn't at home that much because I was practicing as much. But the point is that we needed to talk about something that was very meaningful to us. That kind of a relationship that God planned for us to have to consummate all of the other things that we do and talking and things. And, you know, you realize, and some of you are here that, you know, we just both have passed the senior citizen age and things like this. We're not dead. You know, there may be snow on the roof, but there's fire in the hearth. those kind of things. And it gets better because you understand each other, or should. And we want it to be that way. We want our marriage life in all of its parts to be better and better every year. And we don't want to put a guilt trip on you or an expectation on you or something like this and what you're doing. But again, like Cynthia said, having a heart to communicate and to relate to one another. It's a far cry from Genesis chapter 3. Remember we started off with that, where the husband would be the tyrant over his wife and the wife would manipulate and try to control her husband? See, we're talking about changing that to a spirit-filled life where God's in control and we treat each other as heirs together of the grace of life. Of course, now, that was very serious for me. You know, that was really heavy. I have to show you what Hagar and Helga are doing today. Got to bring you up to date on their communication. Was it something I said? We still don't get it sometimes.
Well, I think the whole intimacy comes about in sharing your heart verbally and physically. And it's just really special when you're taking the time to develop and nurture that relationship. It's the most important relationship on earth. And so we just want to encourage you with that.
I'll pray. Let's pray. Let's question and answer.
Father, thank you so much for this time, and thank you for your word that's very clear about how you want us to communicate verbally and physically. You want no unwholesome word to come out of our mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. And Father, that's how we want to talk to each other. And Lord, we want to fulfill this special, mysterious relationship that you have given to those who are married, Lord, so that we will be all that you want us to be and truly experience what it is to be one flesh, one heart, one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. So thank you for this time. Thank you for these precious couples who are here. We ask your blessing upon us. In Jesus' name, amen.